Before we enter into that part of discussion, I would like to highlight some of the aspects of, say, sustainability in general. What kind of thought, work, ideas have been floating around, which work has happened, so that we are aware. There was one more interesting development which happened recently. It is not that this was the beginning. Much work has happened in that line, but it has to be consolidated. More people need to participate in something like this. But something which further triggered also with some interaction with Mr. Doshi when he was here, this whole topic of sustainability came up again. So he shared with some of us his ideas, how we can start approaching the topic or even develop some base material based on which further discussion, forum, or some input can come, not only in the planning, but different aspects of life. Because sustainability is not only related to the planning alone as such. The classical definition of sustainability talks about social, economical, and environmental aspects, and they go through across all the walks of life in a society like this. I'll just share with you some of the information which is with me, at least, which I am aware, which is in the line or direction of sustainability in a very larger sense, and which ideas are there. But of course, it needs to be further consolidated, and teams are required to work on them. You will see, I'll share with you some information that what is the order of work required for something like this. And towards the end of presentation and session, idea was to see if there are people, like main thing is to see with them, Alon and Batel, if they can, say, conduct or lead an exercise for the sustainability in different aspects. I know it is difficult to read the lower part, but this is from the master plan which was prepared under Asia Urbs, where general norms for development are mentioned. This information which talks about many things, I'll just quickly tell you, like embodied energies of building of to be minimal, the design should be climate responsive, amenities and facilities. All of these aspects are mentioned in the master plan, which is also on the net. This does not mean that just by mentioning it is being followed. Much more research is required. All these directions needs to be further interpreted, researched, detailed out by different architects, project holders, and groups. So basic ideas, basic facts are also mentioned in our master plan. Water use guideline, they are also there, which talks about everything like rainwater harvesting. And there are even studies of different types. They might not be the minute, the best to be implemented stage, but work has happened over a period of time, I believe, not only in Lavinier, old or a feature, in different other parts, whether with Aurora, CSR, and other areas, which needs to be put together in a format which can be used and given as a clear guideline to different projects in different areas. Some of you may know Mr. Aroma Revi. I doubt most of you would know. Mr. Aroma Revi is a very keen resource person in the field of sustainability. You may have heard of Goa Regional Plan, an exercise which won second prize in International Gas Union, where the team of Indian experts, they proposed, the brief was to propose the future of urban areas in next 100 years. So different teams from different part of the world took part, and the second prize was won by the Indian team, in which Aroma Revi, Sanjay Prakash, leading architect in the field of energy efficient architecture, and Rahul Malhotra, and other people. This was the team. They had taken an area of Goa for the regional plan, and they had done detailed exercise, what will be the future of transportation, land use, energy requirement in that area, and how things will change. So they have that kind of background they have been doing, and Aroma Revi is also part of Lavinier's advisory committee. He interacted with, before Lavinier was created, with some of us, and gave a very detailed 15-page note, which talks about for the future requirement, for the future, if a city has to be sustainable, which all type of studies, researches are required, and what should be the capacity of a team to conduct those? If you want, I can share with you that paper I have. This is just a glimpse of that. He talked about, I'll just quickly go through, so you may not need read it here fully. I can give you the printout later or just send a soft file of this. So there are detail aspect, the environmental and resource assessment. The detailed homework is mentioned here. I'll just quickly give you some idea about this. So these were the works which were mentioned, like to have the full land database, environment and resource assessment and mapping, settlement sustainability studies, regional development studies, strategic and future studies, local socioeconomic and human resource studies, energy systems analysis and design for Auroville, and all these detail aspects in which field, water systems analysis and design, food and biomass system, mobility system, all this life cycle assessment of pedestrian human power, social and human development system, livelihood and economic, all this is mentioned, and after that, what was mentioned is the team capacities which are required to do studies like this. It is not something which can be done by only few people in a small amount of time. These are the different team capacities which he had highlighted: the strategic and long-term planning, ecosystem services. I know these studies are very important and complex nature, but I did not know they will make such a sound. They have used the word Rurban, which they used also in their exercise with Goa. Rurban is nothing but a mix of rural and urban. This is the term they have used: planning, urban design, building design, economic system development. So just to give you an idea, this was a detailed list with the sub-list, sub-topics which are required, which will help all of us to understand the nature of different aspects of sustainability and their interlinkages. So this was one aspect. Another is, some of you may know there was a study in 2005, Auroville Sustainability Indicators. Felix, some people might know, who was working at CSR, and he collaborated with some of the people around Auroville, and he came up with the first draft, with the study which was in, you can see, in 2005-2006. And this study, even the basic definition, what is sustainability, Auroville sustainability indicators, ecological, socio-economical, spiritual and cultural, institutional and organizational. So this is the first draft in a way. Some effort has been made. I believe there are many other documents which are available in Auroville, perhaps with different groups, which are in the field of, larger field of sustainability, under the topics of whether it is environmental, social or economical, which we need to put together and develop a common framework. That is very important. Sustainability essentially talks about the integration. So if a framework is required, which we need to come up, and a lot of work or research is required to proceed with something like this. So this was the basic background information I wanted to share. What all information is available, and it can be shared with anybody. We are also in the middle of creating a internal database management for 11 years, where lots of documents we sometimes, perhaps we even ourselves, miss to see them because they are not filed properly. Their system is in place. As soon as we upload all the documents, it will be readily available for use. So this was the background. Now I would like to invite Batel. I would like to actually thank also the Auroville Student and Volunteer Service. Some of you must be there in the last to last Monday's presentation when the students made about the work which was done. Most of those students, even these two people, have come to Lavenier via Auroville Student and Volunteer Service. They have been the receiving hub of different applications where people have been expressing that you would like to come and work for Auroville, and some planning related applications have been coming to Lavenier, and by and large, I think most of the people have been able to join. One more thing I learned with their specific case, they had a special problem regarding visa. So they asked me to help, so I learned how visa papers are organized. This was one particular thing with their case I learned, which papers are required, how to push them here and there, and finally they are here. So without taking much time, I would like to invite Batel.
Dalit mentioned where we had many problems with the visas, and it took us 5 months to get here. So we're finally here, and we are very happy to be here. We'd like to speak today about the idea of relational planning and how to use the ecological principles in planning and design. And I'll start by introducing myself.
Yeah.
Alon and I both studied architecture in Israel. And during my architecture degree, I started to become very interested in sustainability issues. And I wanted to go on and do research about it. But at the time in Israel, there weren't many people who knew much about sustainability. There was only the Desert Institute in the south of Israel, where you could only study about desert-related issues of sustainability. So we decided to go to England, and I did my PhD about ecological architecture in England. And I'll talk more about what I did in my research later on in the presentation. But I'd like first to explain a little bit what I did after I finished my PhD. I joined a very interesting research project in London. We were a team of 7 researchers, and we worked with a crazy professor who thought that designers can save the world. And basically his idea was that designers have a very creative mind. They think outside the box, but they only also know how to apply their thinking in practical terms. So we had basically had a list of 70 different types of designers from different backgrounds. And we did a series of workshops and seminars. To each one, we invited different designers. And we explored different tools to get these designers to collaborate together and try to find solutions to problems of sustainability which go beyond their specific expertise in design. So try to go beyond what they normally do in their professional life and think in much broader terms that relates a lot to planning and to town planning as well. And it was a very interesting project. We also looked a lot at the idea of synergy, so how we can together achieve outcomes which people alone cannot achieve. And we looked at synergy on 4 main different levels. We call them the data level, the information level, the knowledge level, and the wisdom level. Kind of got stuck somewhere around the knowledge level, where we discovered that it's very, 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 very complex. It was already complex enough to look at synergies at the data and information level, but somehow it was still possible, and we had fun, and we did have some outcomes, but when we got to the knowledge level, it started to be very, very difficult. In a way, I think this is what you're trying to do in Oroville as well. It's to look at what you call here the spiritual level, and we called it wisdom sharing, but we never managed to get there. As I said, in the knowledge workshop, we kind of gave up, and we never did the wisdom workshop. So I would be happy to try and see what happens in Oroville if you manage to do that here. And now Alon will speak a little bit about his experience, which is very different.
Hi, Alon. At the time that Batel study, I work most of the time in different architect firms. And all the time I try to connect between nature and the built environment. And I can say that in small scale it was quite successful, even though the building regs quite creating a boundary to make it happen, but it's possible. But I always wanted to make it in a big scale, that the environment in the city will be, in a way, involved with nature. And I found it very problematic from a lot of reason. It took me a lot of time to understand, to make it more specific. This is a project that I work in a company which built its 10-acre site. It's 4 hectares. And it's considered to be the biggest environmental-friendly neighborhood in the UK. It's in Ashford, which is in South England. And the Eurostar, it's a train that's coming from Paris to London, going through this way, and this is the first city in England that it's they have the station that it stopped. The city center actually is in this area, and with our project and another project, we actually exceeded the city center, and the road will come in this way, and the city center will grow. So in this project, I've been involved from the higher position, which means the government, the councils, the traffic consultants, and everything, to see, and it's enabled me to see where is actually the problem. We did 1,000 flats and 8,000 square meters of non-residential, which is education and commercial, and which means that we had a 250 flats per hectare, which is a lot. The way that it's been enabled, we can manage to do it, it's because that in the West, actually, we need to build two systems. One is the original one, which water supplies electricity to everybody and everything. And then we need to add the sustainability systems, which if they're not working very well, we have the backup, because nobody in England will be ready to, that the internet will fall sometimes and they will not have electricity and everything. Everybody, they had a good, not everybody been happy, but we get a good press coverage, and it was a long time until we get the planning permission. But I was frustrated, because if that's the city of the future, so from my perspective, it didn't did a lot, because the experience of, for me, in this environment is not much of a different from the normal cities. And you can say that there's more technology in the building and we spending less energy, but it's not a different lifestyle. During all of this time, I also did the research. I started the research, and I want to experience. And what I understand from this project, is that what is missing is the value. And we need to define, from my perspective, a value for something that not exists yet. How you can value? So I cannot sit in a meeting and say, you know, in this project, the power of nature is missing. In this project, I cannot feel that I'm connected with nature. I think that nobody will take me too seriously. To start and to create a value that not exists, it's a big problem, because normally if you're just with one client, you can take him to a different project and show him that's what my attention is. But as a city, you cannot take the government to a place that not exists and tell him, you know, I want to add it a value that you need just to imagine. And in some way, I want to believe that in Oroville it will be possible. So we can start the presentation now. And I just want to add before we starting that it's not our work in Oroville. We just want to present what we are doing and what our experience in Oroville in the last just 3 weeks. So I started to investigate how humans interact with the environment. And I saw something that a lot of people can relate to and know about. That's between the body, belief, and mind, exists a mutual connection, and everything connects to everything in our experience. If I go a little bit into it, so the body as a nerve system sense the environment and reflect reaction to the mind. The belief is the factor which decide which emotion that the body reflect is suitable or not. And the mind organize the information which allow to the belief and our sensor to coexist. So this circle exists in human being, and to explain how I want to apply it to the built environment, I need to go a little bit more into details. So if I look in the body, I understood that I need to understand what is an emotion to start to investigate it. So I looked on all the mapping that people did on emotions, and it was quite scary. And but if I look on the source of it, and I was sure after that I did this mapping, I thought that I can map anything, any city in every place. That was until I get to Oroville. And if I look on the source of it, there's two main approaches to emotion. One is that emotion is the physical reaction, and the other one is the emotion is the intellect relation that we have to the physical reaction. That was true until the last decade, that a Spanish philosopher said that it's actually working at the same time. We sense and have intellectual relation with the sensor in the same moment, and he actually defined it as intelligence. And this makes a big difference. If I look at the belief, so the way that it's work, it's actually we're creating values in our belief. And the values is what, in the same moment, make us feel or decide if that this emotion is something that we work with or try to ignore and push away. And the mind that is most complex system, but very interesting to the built environment, I need a little bit time to explain. The mind actually is not working, is more like, I need to leave the microphone.
Everybody hear me?
Good.
The mind actually have a memory surface, and if you say that this is a memory surface of a newborn baby, which is blank, you can say that this is the memory surface of a mature person. Now, the process from blank to this is when a new baby is born, he learns how to crawl, so he creates a new pattern. Now, this pattern is exists on the memory surface, and when he wants to crawl again, he creates pattern, and you don't need to think again, how should I crawl? He actually have this in his memory, so he crawl again. Then he learns something new, and he creates a new pattern. Then he learns how to walk, and he creates a new pattern. In the first 3 years, some pattern is created, and some pattern is eliminated. And after 3 years, the pattern starts to be more and more rigid. And then the memory surface become more and more rigid. And when we get it full, and it's working like this, it's not active, the memory surface. Actually, if you look at the information, like we're dropping water into it, and this is a hard surface, so the water will go to the deepest patterns that we have. And this is the pattern that we use more often. And actually, when we're getting information, it's going normally to the pattern that we use the most, and that's the way we act. So, and the memory surface experience two environments in the same time. The inner one in the body and the outer one outside the body.
Thanks. So how can we affect the memory surface? There's two options. One, by extension, which means that if I wake up every morning and I open a door in my living room and I see a tree, and every evening I close this window, so when I'm coming in the morning and open the windows, I actually know what I'm going to see. I open the window, I see the tree, I have this relation with it. One day I'm going down to the field and I'm going to this tree and I see that he have a nice fruit and I eat this fruit and I like it. So the next morning when I open the window, when I look in this tree, I have more information about it, I have more relation with it. So this is an extension of the pattern. And the most exciting thing is the new entry point of information. If, let's say, I'm living in a flat apartment building and I'm going up the stairs and a naughty boy running down and throwing a bucket of water and I'm annoyed, I'm going to my flat, and in the morning I wake up and I hear in the staircase a noise of water and a bucket, and I'm thinking, oh, this is the naughty boy again, I'm getting frustrated, the information coming to the same place, and I open the door and I see that this is the cleaner that cleaned the staircase. So the information stayed the same, but the entry point of the information to my memory surface is changed, and this has changed the whole circle. So let's leave the psychology and come back to that. So we have this information, which we spoke about the circle. So how can we apply this to the built environment? If we change the body to the simulation, and the belief to evaluation, and the mind to organization. So we can start looking at it as a system that the man is the working in the same process, any system that he creates in the same way. So that's the system that we have. And in a normal city, we have two circles. We have the legislative one and we have the executive one. In the legislative, this is the circle that we are working on the UDP. We're creating every 5 years, we're creating a new urban development plan. And the simulation is by the residents and what's happening on the ground. The evaluation is being done by the government and the organization is done by the council. If you look at the executive, it's actually when the UDP, the Urban Development Plan, coming into action, we have in the simulation the clients, the evaluation is the council. The council moved from the organization to the evaluation, and the organization is the architect. The architect trying to actually to create that the client, the council, and the values will work together. So we have two circles, but each one of them works as a human mechanism. So what's happening in Oroville? In Oroville, we have the simulation, which is the resident assembly. We have the evaluation with the governing board and the IIC, International Advising Council. And we have the working group. Now, this is a different situation, which is quite interesting, which means that the working group is part of the resident assembly, and each time a different working group take this position. When I saw it in the beginning, I thought, wow, this is wonderful. They actually succeed to eliminate the brain, which is part of the goal. I mean, we want to eliminate the structural patterns that we created. But when I look at it more into details, I see that quite the opposite happened. Each time a working group coming out to this place, and I quite believe that if I were to ask each working group what their values, how they see the city will develop, it will be a bit different. And the assimilation part also changed because this working group going out and it's reorganized itself a bit in a different way. So what we actually have, let's say that we have 9 working group, we have 9 layers of that, one above the other, and we decided let's try to function this way. We have a lot of patterns working together, and we're trying to find the way to work together and to be one system. So, it didn't come very well in this computer. It's supposed to be in the background, and it's actually showed the complexity of the system of 3 of them. Because we changed computer, it's come very bad. So what I wrote here is that we are here in Lavenir Group, and we need to work on something, but to make it happen, we need to be in relation with the resident assembly and the governing board, and nothing will happen if we don't have this full... So what we're trying to do is actually to find the way to make all this functional group to coexist together and start to find a way that can actually find the connection between them or the patterns that we are connected one above the other and to see how can we work as one system. And to do that, we think about to do in mapping of that based on ecological principles.
Okay, I just like to stress again that what Alon explained so far is just an exercise that we did, and we don't claim to say that we know how Oroville functions, but it's just from what we understand so far, and probably we'll understand that there are many more layers and that it's probably impossible, but at least we give it a try. So now I will go on to talk about actually the research that I did for my PhD, where I looked at ecological principles. And I'll start by explaining very briefly the difference between how an organism functions and how a mechanism functions. And it explains very beautifully the main difference between the two. So an organism is an autopoietic system, which means that it grows itself. while a mechanism is an allopoietic system, which means that there is an external force that assembles it. An organism rules itself, while for a mechanism rules are given. An organism is holarchic in structure, and I'll explain later what holarchic means exactly. And a mechanism is hierarchic in structure. An organism evolves while a mechanism is reinvented. An organism repairs itself while a mechanism is repaired. So how all of this relates to sustainable design? In sustainable design, under its umbrella, we have all of these different problems or concerns that sustainable design claims to try and solve. But today, it's being done still in an allopoietic manner, which means that there are all these rules given sometimes by government, sometimes by architects, about how a sustainable building or city should function. And I think my view is that there is a problem with it, because all these problems are very, very complex, and you cannot just solve them by giving a set of rules. You have to find a system which is much more organic and functions in a much more flexible way, in the same way that an ecological system functions. And the main difference is to shift the focus from designing a system or a building or a city into designing a way for this system to operate, so that the system can by itself continue to develop. And it's shifting the focus from designing things in isolation to looking at the relationships between these things, whether the things are buildings or areas or functional units or whatever. It depends what you're focusing on. So now I'll try to explain a little bit what these ecological principles that I'm talking about are, and I divided them into three main groups. The first group explains how the part and the whole within a system relate to one another, and there are three main principles that explain this relationship. And I'll go a bit into each one of them. The second group explains the nature of these dynamic relations. And the third group of principles explains the idea of emergence. So how, from all these constant dynamic relations, new conditions can emerge by themselves. So there are these three groups, and I'll try to explain very briefly about each one. The idea of interdependence, it's mainly the idea that the whole Earth is a self-regulating system, including biotic and abiotic components, and they all are interdependent. And there's also the idea of structural coupling, which explains it very well, that the system and its environment, and it can be any system, they always co-evolve in relation to one another. So you cannot differentiate one from the other. The idea of purposefulness basically means that organisms embody their purpose in themselves, and this purpose is mainly to exist. And being part of the big system of Gaia, all living systems can be considered to possess the same purpose. In this purpose is mainly that of maintaining their own existence and that of the bigger system. So again, there is interdependence also in purpose. And all of this helps to explain how the parts and the whole are related to one another. The idea of autopoiesis. Autopoiesis is a process by which a system can continuously recreate itself. And this happens through the interaction of its components. And one of the main examples is a cell. So a cell has inside it all these components, the nucleus, the enzymes, the fluids, the proteins, and they all together function to create and recreate the cell. It never stops working. And then the relational dynamics are explained by these three principles. The first one, positional value. Positional value means that each component in a system has its position, and this position has a certain value, but also that this position is dynamic. So a component never stays in the same position. It's always changing its position, and usually it's a circular movement, so it will end up at the same position that it started, but it's always dynamic, and it can also be seen in some ecological systems as a spiral movement, so it doesn't come back exactly to the same place. It's always changing a little bit, but it's going through the same movement. The idea of feedback is very important. It's a system of regulation. We have negative feedback and positive feedback in ecological system. Negative feedback is actually a good kind of feedback, not negative as it sounds, but it's the kind of feedback that keeps the system in balance. So if there is some kind of movement, a negative feedback acts in opposition to this movement, so it keeps the system in balance. While a positive feedback means that if there is a movement, this force adds in the same direction, so the system can develop. It can also end up as a chaotic situation, but positive feedback is the force that drives the system into a different state. It can be either chaos or development. The idea of homeostasis means that mostly in nature, systems want to remain homeostatic. That's why they use negative feedback all the time. And small-scale adaptations are necessary in order to avoid larger and more disruptive changes. So there are always these small movements in order to keep the system in balance and to avoid catastrophe. Now, the idea of emergence, so how new conditions can be created from within the system and not by an external force. The idea of holarchy, it's an organization which is formed from the bottom upwards. So we have, again, this example of an organism which is composed. First, there are molecules, and each molecule is a whole in itself, but it's also a part of a cell. So the molecules interact until they build cells, the cells interact until they create tissues, and so on. So this is an example of an holarchic structure that is built from the bottom upwards and not imposed from the top down. And the idea of increasing complexity, so systems in nature, as they evolve, they become more and more complex over time. And the creation of an embryo is one example. An increase in complexity is generally characterized by two phenomena. One is that there is an increasing distinction between the parts as the system evolves. So if we look at the creation of an embryo, we have cells that duplicate themselves. And in this process, the cells become distinct from one another. So each cell gains its specific function or purpose, but also there is an increased connectivity between the cells because without this connectivity, the organism cannot function. So it's very important. The system becomes more complex, but in order to become more complex, it needs to have increased distinction between the parts and also increased connectivity. And the idea of self-transcendence, how actually a system can transcend itself and evolve. There are two main processes that allow for self-transcendence. One is called homogeneous cooperation. It's when a system duplicates itself, but then it differentiates to create a new type of system, usually a more complex one. So again, as we saw, the cells duplicate themselves, but they differentiate. So each cell gains a different purpose. And as a result, we have an organism. And another process is heterogeneous cooperation, where there is a symbiotic cooperation between different types of organisms. One example is a lichen, which is a combination of an alga and a fungus, two different organisms. So these are the nine principles that I looked at, and how can we use this knowledge in Oroville? Of course, there are many ways to look at it, but this is just one possibility that I thought about. Through my research on town planning, I learned that a place also in nature and also a city, which can be looked at as a natural system, comes to life through the interaction of its parts. And when the parts cease to interact, there is no life. And in a city, you can see it through the interaction between the different units, commercial units, cultural units, residential, historical, and so on. So I'm suggesting that what makes the liveliness of the city is the relationships between these units, actually. So I think from what I'm interested in to examine in Oroville is to see what keeps it alive today and how when we go on to look at the master plan and future developments for Oroville, we are not going to lose this liveliness that it has today. So I think it will be interesting to look at Oroville as a collection of different functional units and then try to examine the relationships between them. And I just came up with a few of these units. I don't know if it's a good list, but probably there are more units. But I divided it into residential units, services units, guest units, commercial units, educational units, cultural units, environmental units, and I wanted to say spiritual unit, but I think probably the matrimonial is something in itself, so I gave it its own category. And then one possibility is, first, before we try to look at the connections between these different units, there's also complexity to each one of these categories in its own. So to look first at the relationships between each one of them. So if we take the residential units as an example, which is all the Oroville communities, and these are just a few to give an idea, and start to map the relationships between them. So you can see that some lines are thicker because maybe, again, it doesn't mean that actually the connection between celebration and fraternity is a strong relationship. I just randomly drew the lines. But some connections are stronger than others, and some connections may not exist at all. But just to start to look at the relationship that exists, I think is interesting and can reveal some things about Oroville. And maybe some of you already know this, and I'm just talking because I don't know anything, but that's what I'm interested in. And then do the same exercise for each one of the units, look at the relationships, and then after that, try to map the relationships between the different type of units, or functional units. And if we look at, it's very complex, so if you have only 8 units, you already have 28 different links. And then try to use the ecological principles as guidelines for examining these links. And then as a result, we can maybe see which links work and which links don't work and need to be strengthened. And I think it can allow for planning which is based on something. That you see in some kind of mapping that becomes visible. I don't know.
Summarize. It's just about to try to understand something that's really hard to understand from what's been developed here in the last 40 years and what you did here in the last years, and to try to learn from that for the future. And to implement this maybe in the master plan. We said that in the conclusion, we need to interact now with the bigger system that we started with the connection of the values and the sensor connection with the resident assembly. And then from this reply, it's creating another circle. Which this is part of the how we see it as the big system works, that the connection with the other parts is part of the process.